Checking back in with Kelly Eisner of the American Red Cross for another update on how they're coping during this pandemic. Hi, Kelly. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Joe. So glad to be here. Thank you.
Sure, our pleasure. I thought, you know, with the holidays here now, it's always a good time to remind folks, I guess, about what the American Red Cross does and what it needs.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't have to tell you, this has been I hate the word unprecedented because I think it gets thrown around all the time. But if there was ever a reason to use that word, it would be 2020. I mean, we have seen a record-breaking disaster season, wildfire season. Here at home, we've seen home fires, some pretty bad home fires where a lot of people have been left without a place to stay in the middle of a pandemic when we're all being told to stay home. It's really just been, you know, I always look forward to New Year's Eve, but that countdown is going to be a little extra special this year, I think.
Yeah, I don't think anybody will be sad to see this one go, for sure. How is the Red Cross coping so far, I should say?
Well, I mean, we've really done I'm so proud of our volunteers and our staff for being able to adjust to this pandemic. Like, I keep thinking these are things that would stop me in my tracks, but, you know, our volunteers just figure out a way to still do the same service delivery, but do it virtually. You know, if we're talking to clients, people who have had some kind of disaster, our mental health specialists are on the phone or they're on, you know, a video chat with people. They're really still making those connections and offering up the services. It looks a little bit different, but it really hasn't decreased. And if anything, in some areas, we're seeing a lot more demand on our services, like the food pantry.
That's interesting. First of all, I didn't know the Red Cross provided mental health services. What is that?
It's something that it's run out of our disaster line. So because it kind of, if you think about it, it goes hand in hand. So if you even, I don't even mean like the, you know, the hurricanes and flooding and tornadoes, obviously that's an incredible service. But, you know, if you've been burned out of your home, you know, maybe the first couple of days and weeks, you're focused on finding a place to stay, getting clothes, keeping your job, just keeping it all together. But then after those immediate needs are addressed, it starts to sink in that, oh my God, I lost my home. There were boxes of baby pictures that burned, things like that. That's where the Red Cross does provide casework. And, you know, we have trained social workers that volunteer with the Red Cross. We also, some of our volunteers have been specially trained in, it's a program we call psychological first aid, where we're reaching out to people and just, you know, either talking to them, listening, connecting them with resources, you know, just really being that shoulder, even if it's a virtual shoulder.
Good to know. I was not aware that that was actually part of the service. You think of the Red Cross as two things, right? You think of blood donations, and then you think of your disaster response.
It's true. And, you know, even as someone who I work for the Red Cross full time, and I am still, it's like peeling back layers of an onion when I start to look at one area of service and then see all the different things we do, and that it's still, I mean, years in, it's still amazing to me to learn about all the things that our staff is out there doing.
Yeah. Who are these hero volunteers, Kelly, you know, and how does one become one?
Well, I mean, the Red Cross would not function without volunteers. I mean, we do have paid staff, but about, I think the statistic, and please don't quote me on this, I think it's something like 92% of our Red Cross workforce is volunteer in some form. So really it's, I mean, you know, if you're at a blood drive, the phlebotomists, because they're specially trained, they are paid staff, but the person who's checking you in, who's greeting you, taking your temperature, that kind of thing, that person is almost certainly a volunteer. If you are unlucky enough to need the Red Cross in the middle of the night, the fire teams that go out, or now virtually, but the ones who respond, those are almost certainly volunteers. We do have some paid staff who also volunteer in those roles. Even, you know, I'm always amazed at these big national disasters. You know, if you're talking about a Hurricane Laura, something like that, most of the people that were down there as part of the Red Cross effort were either volunteers or, again, paid staff taking a break from their normal work to volunteer in those situations. Redcross.org/volunteer today is how you would sign up. And actually, I always tell people locally, it is MAvolunteers@redcross.org, and that puts you in touch with someone who's physically in Massachusetts.
Oh, good to know. Okay. And I'm assuming there's a training program that's involved or a kind of a category of things you could choose from, I guess, to volunteer.
Absolutely. If, you know, it kind of goes back to the large breadth of what we do, whatever you're interested in, there's probably an opportunity for you. We do have a lot of training right now. Our training is virtual, but it's not all just like watching videos. A lot of these are virtual instructor-led sessions where you're actually talking to a person, you're just doing it through a screen. And actually next month, either at the end of next month or the beginning of February, we haven't quite figured out the date yet. We're going to be doing, it's something we do every year. It's a disaster training institute. So if you've been thinking about it and, you know, there's a lot of things that you want to learn more about, this is a great way to do it. We offer even more classes than normal. And I mean, some of these classes really, they're amazing. There's classes on incident command and classes on how to use all the various programs. And then there's stuff like, you know, I mean, the most of the medical classes, the first aid, the CPR, all that is still being done in person. But there are a wide range.
Sounds like it, yeah. Is there a like a minimum requirement to be a volunteer that you have to commit to?
No, actually, for time, we kind of hope that you'll commit to about 10 hours a week if you're able to do that. But really, we have a program too where you can even just volunteer as what we would call an event-based volunteer. So, you know, if we're doing a day of smoke alarm installations, again, once people start being able to do that stuff, you can just volunteer for that event too. What tends to happen though is people sign up for an event and then they start to see, again, you peel back those layers of the onion, you see how much the Red Cross does, and it's kind of hard not to want to do more.
Sure, I'm sure you have volunteers that have been with you for many, many years.
And some of these volunteers too, they have such this depth of institutional knowledge. They know, not only do they know their own community because they're from their community, but then they know the inner workings of the Red Cross. I mean, we have volunteers who are running entire shelter situations. There was a shelter situation up in Malden a few months ago where flooding caused a roof collapse, and volunteers were right in there leading those teams as well. It's not just like a, hey, you over there, pick up that box and move it over there. It's a really hands-on, engaging experience.
Is the Red Cross assisting at all during the pandemic with the field hospitals that the state is setting up?
Not in the hospitals themselves, but we do have a program called our Virtual Family Assistance Center. So if you have lost a loved one to COVID, it's an online center where you can be connected to. There's a lot of different areas, but like we have a contact at social services. There's instructions on, you know, how to work within funeral homes, you know, what the rules are at this moment, how to shut down Facebook accounts for someone who's deceased. Like, it's a lot of different things that you probably aren't thinking of immediately after. And we, in addition to that being on our website, we, you know, send that information to hospitals and to funeral homes, things like that, so that those points of contact, you can get a little more information.
Sure. I know Red Cross too is supporting first responders, right? Firefighters, paramedics, police that go to these scenes.
Absolutely. A lot of, you know, our disaster program managers in the field have such a great relationship with the local fire departments, so that when they're being called, a lot of times they'll call us, or we'll hear the call themselves, we'll go and provide that support. Again, in kind of non-pandemic times, one of the things that we do that I don't think there's a lot of awareness is we'll canteen for, you know, if there's, hopefully we never have to do this again, but if there's a firefighter funeral or a police officer funeral, a lot of times we'll set up a table with water and supplies, just kind of not to get in the way and not to get any attention, but just to make sure that the people who are taking care of others are also taken care of.
Absolutely. Yeah. If it's, sweltering hot or frigid cold, those folks need some comfort services, right? Some support services. Yeah.
Exactly.
How is the Red Cross doing with its blood donations during this crazy time, Kelly?
Well, you know, once again, it's amazing to see what our staff has been. I was actually at the Boston Donor Center on Friday and just seeing the staff that have been working 7 days a week throughout the pandemic to make sure that the blood supply isn't affected. All summer, we had actually managed to keep up with the demand. Part of that, though, was a decrease in hospital demand. Now we're starting to get to that point where I think, you know, we just want to get the word out that, you know, keep donating if you're able to donate. There's also a great need for convalescent plasma right now. If you're unfamiliar with that, that's if you've actually recovered from COVID yourself and have been symptom free, you can donate your plasma, which is a part of your blood, and the antibodies that you use to fight off the disease can go into someone else and possibly help them fight off the disease as well.
Okay, that is critical, life-saving serum. Even with the vaccine, you know, hopefully coming soon, it's going to be at least 6 months, I'm sure, before there's widespread distribution. So, the antibodies could be critical.
Absolutely, it's and there is a screening process involved, and you do have to show a negative test now. You have to show a former diagnosis and a negative test. But redcrossblood.org/COVID. Plasma, the number four, and then COVID.
Okay.
Do it the other way around.
What does a donation center look like during a pandemic, Kelly? You know, what's actually the process for keeping things safe?
That's a great question. So we, above all else, our goal is to keep our donors and our staff safe. So, you know, the first thing before you're even allowed inside the room where the donation's happening is we'll take your temperature. We ask that you also take your temperature before you leave. We'll take your temperature. We'll ask you to sanitize, make sure your mask is on and covering your whole face. And then you go inside. The beds are spaced out 6 feet in all directions, which can be tricky, especially with some tighter spots. We've been very lucky that a lot of businesses have stepped up to say, hey, I have this giant auditorium that's not being used. But if you're hearing this and you have a space like that, you know, get in touch with us. So the beds are spaced out, you know, our staff obviously are gloved, masked. And, you know, there is the only time, like it's impossible to draw blood without leaning into someone. But that's why, again, we clean every surface, we're gloved, sanitized, we're trying to make it as safe as possible.
Sure. And is there a different recovery procedure after the donation?
Nope. We still have the canteen area and strongly encourage people to sit there for a while. But again, the seats are spaced out, the surfaces are wiped down. We've added volunteers who that's their main job is to just, as soon as someone leaves a chair or a table, they come in and scrub it down. But yes, always hydrate. If you've donated blood, platelets, or plasma, please hydrate immediately.
Sure. And I guess it goes without saying that if you aren't feeling well, don't come in.
Exactly. And the one other thing that's different too is that we really are strongly, strongly, strongly encouraging appointments. I know sometimes in non-pandemic times, we can accept walk-ins. It just, by taking walk-ins, it would throw off the whole, we have to closely watch how many people are inside at any time. So if you are feeling sick the morning of and don't think you should come out, that's fine, stay home. But if you can, just cancel that appointment so someone else can take it.
Sure, that's a great point. Absolutely. Hopefully, there's a steady stream of donors that are willing to give. How often, who can give and how often can someone give?
Almost anybody can give. You can, if you're giving whole blood, which is the most common type of donation, it's every 56 days, as long as you're in good general health. You know, we don't just, like everyone thinks about COVID symptoms right now, but really any sort of cold and flu symptoms, just maybe wait a week. You know, there are certain medications, if you're on blood thinners, you might have to check the website before you go just to see what the rules are for that. But there's no, you have to be at least 17, no upper age limit. I've met, you know, 90 and 100-year-old donors. I really have from around here, so.
That's great. Any specific type of blood that's in critical need right now?
Always O negative, and really any O type blood. I'm O positive, and I know that mine is almost as much in demand. It's because the O type is the universal donor. So it's what hospitals use if there's a trauma and emergency. There's no time to test blood. But really, I would never let your blood type deter you from donating. One of the things that our staff is trained on is, you know, someone walks in and says, hey, I'm AB, what should I donate? And we can say, oh, you're AB positive, why don't you consider a plasma donation versus, oh, you're O negative, please give whole blood. And it's always up to you what you do, but if there's blood in your body, you can donate it to the Red Cross.
Okay, good to know. And if you don't know your type, is that okay?
Yep. Actually, that's one of the things that we'll type it for you. Not immediately. It's a couple weeks turnaround. But once you've made your donation, you get the thing in the mail, or now it's virtual, but it'll say what your blood type is so that you'll know for next time.
Okay. And is the donation process different for the antibodies?
All our blood donations are tested for COVID antibodies. And again, it's the same thing where you won't get it that day. You'll get the antibody test about a week or a couple weeks later. And you can also log into the website or into the app where you made your appointment and check it there. As soon as the results are available to us, they'll be posted there.
Okay. And to donate platelets, does that look different from a whole blood donation?
Platelets are, it's a different process, and those can only be done at our one of seven Red Cross blood donor centers. So nearby here, I think Raynham or Weymouth, probably Weymouth would be the closest. You go in, there's a separate machine. It's a little bit longer process. You've got one in each arm. The blood comes out, it gets spun through it's not really a centrifuge, but it's kind of like a centrifuge, and then put back in. Platelets you can give every 7 days. And the key thing about platelets that makes them different is that more than half of the platelets the Red Cross connects specifically go to people battling cancer, mm-hmm. or at any stage in the cancer process. They help with infections and with blood clotting.
Sure. What's kind of the average shelf life of blood, Kelly?
So whole blood, red blood cells last 45 days. Those can be frozen. Platelets, though, can't. They're just very delicate. They have to, not only can't they be frozen, they have to be agitated. Otherwise, because they help with clotting, they clump up. So platelets only last 5 days. So really, when you think about it, you can donate every 7 days, but the product is only lasting 5 days. Plus, that doesn't count the time that we have to test it and, you know, make sure that it's safe to go to hospital. So there is a constant demand for platelets.
Okay. And how is it determined where my donation goes? You know, how does that process work?
That's a great question, too. It's based on need. So, you know, we, the Red Cross of Massachusetts, would try to meet all our local hospital needs first. If we find ourselves in a position where we can meet all the hospital needs and still have blood available for distribution, you know, the Red Cross is the largest supplier in the U.S., so we can help get that to wherever it may be needed. You know, we have this tracking feature in our app where if you sign up for it, once you've donated, you'll get a little text alert that says, your blood was used at so-and-so. Most of them that I get when I do it are, you know, Brigham and Women's or something, you know, something local, South Shore Hospital I get a lot. But every once in a while, you'll get one from, like, Connecticut. I got one from North Carolina once, which is, it's kind of cool, you know. It really does just go where it's needed.
Yeah, I'm not surprising, I guess, where we live here is kind of the epicenter of healthcare for the country, and one of them anyway.
Plenty of good hospitals here, and unfortunately, need is everywhere, not just here. But yeah, I mean, Massachusetts is kind of a leader in healthcare, so.
Right. Yeah. What are you hearing from some of the larger, you know, healthcare institutions when it comes to both COVID and non-COVID, you know, situations?
Exhaustion. I mean, I think this pandemic, I don't, maybe smarter people than me realized how long that this, we could actually be under this umbrella, but I know I didn't think that we would still be in the same lockdown that we, in December, that we were in March, you know, and our, again, every healthcare worker is a hero. I mean, they've not stopped. They've sped up in a lot of cases. Their hours have gotten longer. Their masks have gotten tighter. We're seeing that increase now. I mean, it is just, I've always thought that doctors and nurses were heroes, and not just the doctors and nurses, all the lab techs and everyone that is going to a hospital on a regular basis, but this just makes it more so.
Yeah. How old is the Red Cross actually, Kelly?
1881. We were founded in 1881, so don't make me do math in my head.
No, no.
That would be 129 years. Is that right?
I was just thinking the Red Cross was around during the 1918 pandemic as well.
Absolutely, that is true. And one of the things that I learned was that convalescent plasma was actually around early on too, during the Spanish flu. It was one of the early ways, and during the measles outbreak of, you know, a couple decades later, it actually, that's when this kind of treatment was first thought of and used. And, you know, what's old is new again. It really is showing success now. It's kind of a neat circle.
Yeah. Curious, has there been any conversation as to if the Red Cross could assist in vaccinations?
I don't know. It's probably not something that I actually, you know what, I shouldn't answer that. I should find out for you because I really don't know what our policy is would be on that. I mean, I guess I know the National Guard is helping with administer vaccines. So I don't know if there's a training program or if it needs specific skills.
Yeah, just curious because we're seeing some of the chain pharmacies, you know, step up. Even dental offices have been, you know, offered to do that. So as a, you know, a widespread plan, the Red Cross is perfectly situated. You're all over the country.
It's a really great idea. And as soon as we get off, I'm going to make some phone calls and see what I can find out.
Okay, yeah, if you get an answer, let us know. We'll be happy to do an update.
Sure.
In the meantime, anything else we should touch on right now?
No, I mean, the one thing that I always say, you know, there, if you hear what I'm saying and this sounds good to you and you want to be a part of this, there's a couple ways that you can help the Red Cross. Obviously, you can give blood or platelets or plasma, redcrossblood.org for that. We would love if you could volunteer your time, redcross.org. And then, of course, if you can't do either of those things, or if you want to do even more, we could always use a financial donation. Unfortunately, operating in a pandemic has been really expensive. You know, when here in Massachusetts and nationally, as we're doing these shelters, a lot of times these are, the fancy word is non-congregate shelters, but it means that the Red Cross is putting you up in your own hotel room versus, you know, a cot in a larger sheltering area. And there's an expense that's connected to that. So I would be remiss if I didn't say you can also make a much needed financial donation.
Okay. And they are tax deductible, certainly.
Absolutely.
Well. Has PPE been a problem at the Red Cross as it has been in other healthcare facilities?
In the beginning, it was really hard to come by. Thankfully, you know, that's another thing about the Red Cross being big is that we were able to work at a national level and secure and buy where we needed. But, you know, the other thing too, early on, there were all these warnings about, you know, don't buy PPE because we need to save it for our first responders. So, you know, it was tough to navigate. I'm glad that I'm not in a procurement because that's a, you know, that's an incredible challenge. But thankfully, we've had a lot of companies step up. Actually, Anheuser-Busch is making sanitizer for us. So, I mean, things like that, really just you piece it together and you make it work.
Interesting. Of course, they have the alcohol already. So.
Well, yeah, it works out.
Sure. So anything else right now, Kelly?
No, that's everything. It's such a nice thing to talk to you. I really appreciate it, Joe.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you. And please reach out if we can do anything in the future. We'll be here for you.
Absolutely.
All right. Nice to see you. Be well.
You too.